Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, August 4th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Minnesota farmers aren't crazy about either presidential candidate, and the head of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank goes to North Minneapolis. Donald Trump will make his first stop in Minnesota since becoming a candidate, Brian Baxt reports.
Trump is scheduled to be in Minnesota on August 19th for a fundraiser. It will be his first Minnesota visit since he began his campaign for president. An invitation obtained by NPR News seeks donations between $1,000 and $100,000 per couple, with the proceeds split among his campaign, the Republican National Committee, and state Republican parties. Larger donors will qualify for photos and a more intimate reception with a GOP candidate. A location has not been set. It's not clear if Trump will have any public rally associated with his visit. Trump finished third in Minnesota's precinct caucuses in March. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
At the annual Farm Fest show in southwest Minnesota, talk about politics is as likely as talk about corn prices. But this year, reporter Mark Stile found farmers unusually undecided and reticent about the presidential candidates.
Farm Fest is mostly about having an opportunity to see the newest agricultural equipment and talk with experts who may have a solution for a particular farm problem. But candidates invariably show up for debates and to hunt for votes during the show's three-day run near Redwood Falls. After the political conventions and ongoing controversies surrounding both major party candidates, the presidential race is also on the minds of many here. Southwest Minnesota farmer Roger Knutson says so far he's mostly disappointed with what he's hearing from both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
It's kind of hard to listen to. I mean, we are not hearing issues dealt with, and it's just a bunch of name-calling.
Knutson says he's leaning towards Clinton right now, but could switch. He's disappointed that both candidates oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement. He says while he doesn't know all the details of the plan, he believes it would increase sales of corn and other U.S. commodities. But for other farmers, leadership is a bigger issue than trade. Western Minnesota farmer Ralph Peterson is supporting Trump.
A private businessman can do a much better job than a politician can. I want somebody who is actually working for a living, not working off the people for a living.
Many farmers lean to the right, according to the AgriPulse Communications Producer Survey. 70% of respondents to the survey earlier this year said they are or favor Republicans. The survey has less than a 4 percentage point margin of error. But to paraphrase both Trump and House Speaker Paul Ryan, many in the Farm Fest crowd aren't quite there yet. The common theme in over a dozen conversations was this: they would never vote for Clinton, but weren't ready to commit to Trump either. Several said their vote would come down to which candidate was the lesser evil. One farmer who generally votes Republican declined an interview request, but threw up his hands in exasperation at the presidential candidates, asking, "Is this the best we can do?" Kyle Noyes, who works occasionally on the family farm he grew up on, says Trump needs to do better to win his vote.
I consider myself to be a Republican, but a little disappointed in our candidate. Lack of specifics, and he seems to always be putting his foot in his mouth. Just the way he handles himself. I don't like it, I guess.
There were also people at Farm Fest upset with Trump's position on immigration issues, such as building a wall along the Mexican border. Immigrants make up a big part of the state's agricultural labor force, working on Minnesota livestock, dairy, and crop farms. Many agricultural organizations have pushed for new laws to allow more immigrants into the country for work purposes. Tom Olson farms in southwest Minnesota near the town of Dundee. He raises hogs and says immigrant labor is important in the processing of the animals at meatpacking plants.
I think we're going to have some type of a work permit program, something different than we have. It's not really working now.
But Olson wonders how much farmers will get out of either campaign. He says there hasn't been much mention of agriculture yet in the war of words this campaign season. But there's still 3 months to go, and he's hoping his industry gets a little more attention. Mark Stile, Minnesota Public Radio News, Redwood County.
The president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis says he wants to learn more about economic and racial disparities. This came after an unusual meeting yesterday with a group of North Minneapolis residents and activists. Peter Cox has more.
Neil Kashkari sat and listened to people struggling to make ends meet. Rashida Credit, a mother of five, told the Minneapolis Fed president about how her boyfriend works two jobs, how she had to quit her $9-an-hour job because the cost of childcare was too high. And she had a suggestion.
So I'm just wondering if you would commit to spending a day in the life of mine or one of my other workers here that are having problems and seeing what we go through day to day, having a struggle.
Kashkari, who once spent a week living on the streets of California trying to get a feel for homelessness, was game.
There is nothing else like walking in somebody else's shoes, even if it's for a day or for a week, to get a sense of what the challenges are. And so I appreciate the request. I'm happy to take you up on it. We'll find a time. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Kashkari has been president of the 6th state district of the Central Bank since January. His meeting, which came after an employee of Neighborhoods Organizing for Change requested it personally, surprised some. NOC is known for its political activism on raising the minimum wage and protesting police brutality. The employee was shocked with how quickly Kashkari said yes.
Our job is to represent everyone in our community. That's the Federal Reserve's job. Not just banks, not just folks who are doing well, to represent everyone. And so getting out into the community to learn firsthand what's working and what's not is critical. So I'm thrilled to be here, and I hope, I honestly mean this, this is the first of many visits. This is the beginning of a partnership. This is not a one-time event.
Kashkari heard complaints about the lack of good jobs on the North Side and about the struggle to make rent, to raise children, and to maintain a car on low wages. He said the Fed won't be able to address everything, but it does have the power to adjust interest rates, which can have an effect on unemployment and inflation. He says by setting fiscal policy, Congress could address racial disparities if it wanted. Kashkari comes to the table with an interesting resume. He led the federal government's program to bail out banks in 2008 as the country slid into the Great Recession. The recession continues for some.
Some of the racial disparities are a crisis, and we need to treat them like a crisis. You know, one of the things I learned in 2008 is you don't tackle a crisis with incremental solutions. You tackle a crisis with overwhelming force. And so if this is a crisis, and I think certainly parts of this are, then we need to bring overwhelming force to try to address it.
Kashkari says he'd like to see more research on why there are such gaps in unemployment. According to the most recent numbers from the state of Minnesota, the unemployment rate for people who are black was 9.7. It was 2.9% for people who are white. At the moment, Kashkari says he's in favor of keeping the interest rate low to attempt to create more jobs. But he pointed out some in the Fed believe that could lead to inflation. The Fed has left the door open to raise rates as soon as September. Monetary policy debates aside, some appreciated just having someone as influential as Kashkari listen to them. Former educator Tanise Hodges is working, but right now lives in her car.
And I really appreciate that he came to listen to us so he can get a better understanding of that firsthand account versus just numbers and statistics, and we're just numbers out here in the world. So I think it was a very good meeting.
Kashkari agreed to meet with people like Tanise Hodges and activists with NOC in the future. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
An announcement by Enbridge Energy that it will end a key partnership in the Sandpiper Pipeline project raises questions about the future of the proposed pipeline across northern Minnesota. The Sandpiper proposal is undergoing environmental review in Minnesota. Calgary-based Enbridge says it's buying a share of a new pipeline system, which will allow North Dakota oil to bypass Minnesota on its way to Gulf Coast refineries. Dan Gunderson explains.
Enbridge and Marathon Petroleum are partners on the Sandpiper project. Marathon was expected to be the primary oil shipper using the pipeline. Late Tuesday, Enbridge announced it would partner with Marathon to buy a stake in the Bakken pipeline system. That system bypasses Minnesota, with a line from North Dakota to Illinois and a second line from Illinois to Texas. The system is under construction, and it's expected to be operational by the end of this year. Enbridge says once that deal is complete, it will end a joint venture with Marathon Petroleum to build Sandpiper. So what does that mean for the future of the controversial Minnesota pipeline? Stephen Padgett, an analyst with First Energy Capital in Calgary, Alberta, says it's too early to be sure.
We know they're relooking at their plan to build the Sandpiper pipeline. My guess, and it's just a guess at this point, is that Sandpiper is not built in the near term while they take a stake in this pipeline.
Padgett says the change is driven by the lengthy Minnesota regulatory process, the fact the Bakken line will be open by the end of the year, and the drop in North Dakota oil production. He says the Bakken pipeline system gives Enbridge options.
Talking to Enbridge, what it really does for them is open up markets to the eastern part of the U.S. Gulf, where there's well over 2 million barrels a day of refining capacity, and this pipeline attaches to much of it.
Enbridge didn't respond to an interview request. An emailed statement says, quote, "The scope and timing of the Sandpiper pipeline project will be evaluated to ensure that it is positioned to meet the growing need for pipeline capacity," end quote. Enbridge says the Bakken pipeline system purchase will not affect plans to rebuild an existing pipeline that follows a route similar to that proposed for Sandpiper. Opponents of the Sandpiper pipeline hope Enbridge will abandon the project. Environmental groups say the proposed pipeline route through northern Minnesota puts too many lakes at risk of pollution. Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy attorney Kevin Lee says having Marathon Petroleum drop out of the project eliminates the need for Sandpiper.
It's a big deal because from the beginning, Sandpiper was fundamentally a project for one company, Marathon. They're a critical investor, and they've essentially jumped ship and decided to use a different pipeline.
While environmental groups say they are cautiously optimistic this may be the end of Sandpiper, supporters of the project believe it will still happen, creating thousands of jobs and pumping millions of dollars into the economy. Kevin Pranis is with Laborers International Union in Minnesota. He says it makes sense for Enbridge to buy into a nearly completed pipeline. But he says even if Sandpiper doesn't make economic sense now, it will in the future, when North Dakota oil production takes off again.
We see the Bakken as a very long-term play, you know, 80, 100 years worth of work there and oil production. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if Sandpiper continues to move forward as a project, although clearly it makes a difference when a second pipeline is put in service.
Enbridge plans to complete an evaluation of the Sandpiper project by the end of September. Covering the environment, Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.